America's Cannabis Conversation.
Good afternoon and welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation. I'm Mark Corsi, CEO and co-founder of the W420 Radio Network. We would like to thank our audience for making our premier show an amazing success. Our team has spent months creating a program that is dedicated to education, challenge, and promoting a healthy and lively dialogue regarding all things cannabis. Each Saturday at 4:20, our host, Dan Perkins, will lead the conversation and introduce you to a wide variety of guests and engage in thought-provoking discussions on topics from tips on growing to what's next in legalization. We are proud to continue October commercial-free, so sit back and enjoy America's Cannabis Conversation. And thank you for tuning in. And now, let's start the conversation.
Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation. Heard every Saturday at 4:20 p.m. online at americascannabisconversation.com. Each week, we provide our listeners information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and adult-use cannabis industry. You'll hear from industry experts, elected officials, local growers, detractors, and more. Learn how to build your own cannabis business, how to grow the product, what's legal, and where it's legal. Tune in each week to hear the latest industry news and updates from the American Cannabis Industry Association in Washington, tips on investing in cannabis, personal success stories, and more. It's time to join the conversation. And here's your host, Dan Perkins.
This is Dan Perkins with your cannabis 2.5 minutes of instant news. Let's start with Detroit, Michigan. Michigan cannabis regulatory officials more than doubled the number of communities eligible for social equity assistance, which means a reduction of application fees and potentially dozens of additional recreational marijuana business applicants. The expansion from 19 to 41 communities occurred after the staff of the Marijuana Regulatory Board concluded its research. Michigan will start accepting recreational marijuana business license applications on November 1st, and adult use of marijuana sales are expected to start next year. Let's move on to Washington, D.C. The Food and Drug Administration on Friday issued an updated consumer alert warning people not to use vaping products containing THC, though it made no mention of recommendations for cannabis businesses. The statement from the FDA Commissioner, Norman Sharpless, notes that the FDA does not have enough data to identify the cause or causes of lung injuries, and that no one compound or ingredient has emerged as a single culprit. Ongoing testing by the FDA and states have revealed that most of the people sickened from vaping have used products containing THC, although some have used both THC and e-cigarettes. Now moving to Boston, Massachusetts. A four-month ban in Massachusetts on the sale of all marijuana and tobacco vaping products is expected to remain in place. On Friday, U.S. District Judge Indira Tarwani was leaning towards dismissing temporary restraining orders to stop the ban, which is being sought by the Vape Technology Association, a national industry trade group. The larger legal challenge to the ban is a suit that names Governor Charlie Baker as the defendant is yet to be decided. And finally, for this segment, we move to Denver, where the Denver Police Department warned Colorado cannabis businesses that it is seeing an increase in burglaries at dispensaries and is encouraging operators to report any suspicious activities. The DBT created an online bulletin suggesting several steps that are both proactive and reactive that businesses can take to try and prevent burglaries. Two of the suggested steps are to lock up all cannabis products in a safe overnight. Another alternative is to place video cameras strategically to ensure video of every entrance and any area where vehicles may approach the building. If you want more of the tips, go to W420RadioNetwork.com and sign up for the News Insider. This way we can send you updates to your cell phone or to your computer as they evolve. This is Dan Perkins, and this has been your America's Cannabis Conversation 2.5 minutes quick news.
Joining us today in the conversation is Morgan Fox, the Communications Director for the National Cannabis Industry Association. And we're talking about a very, very important issue that's gotten a tremendous amount of press, and his industry has taken a position, and that is the problem of vaping and illnesses and death. So, Morgan, welcome to the conversation.
And thanks again for having me.
You're welcome. I think there's a lot of misconception about what this issue is. At least from your association standpoint, tell us what you think the issues are.
Well, nobody really knows the root causes of this yet, and I think that it may take a while to really determine what those are. In terms of the specific causes, such as whether or not it's vitamin E acetate additives or fungicides or the actual vape cartridges themselves and not what's inside them. But what we do know is that the vast majority of these cases have been involving illicit market products. The few cases that have pointed towards legal products that were sold through regulated stores were not definitive that those were actually the causes of them. And a recent NBC News report found no contaminants in the legal products tested, but some form of contaminants in all of the illicit market products tested. So this is really something that shows that, for the most part, regulation works at keeping potentially dangerous products out of the legal market. And we need to be focusing on what we can do to not only help states to continue to improve their regulatory processes, but also that we need to do everything we can to help this industry stamp out the illicit market. But in the short term, we're really looking at urging consumers not to purchase cannabis or cannabis products from the illicit market. We're urging producers that may be using any sort of thickening agents to halt their use until we have more information about what exactly is causing this illness outbreak. Most importantly, we're urging Congress to immediately begin to discuss descheduling cannabis and regulating at the federal level so that we can provide overarching guidelines that can help guide states. We can open up research that is currently being blocked by federal prohibition, and we can start displacing the illicit market at a greater level, especially by no longer discouraging states from moving forward towards legalization.
You know, you're talking about a very important issue, and I know in speaking with some people in the California market, the illegal storefronts that are selling illegal cannabis, the plant and products that have been confiscated by the state of California, are containing huge amounts of pesticides and chemicals and poisons and mold, which are all not permitted under California law and all the testing that has to be done. There are some people say that if we continue down the path of what some people want to do, we're going to drive people into the black market to buy cartridges. What do you say about that, Morgan?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if we're looking at states that are considering total bans on these products in the legal market, such as Massachusetts, the most likely result is that it is going to it's not going to halt consumers from getting a hold of these products. It's just going to send them straight to the illicit market. Not only that, but in the lack of competition from the legal market, these illicit market producers are just going to increase their production and probably cut more corners, potentially making their products even more deadly. When we really think about this issue, it's purely one that is driven by prohibition.
I saw the special on CNN with on weed over the weekend, and they were talking about this young man who bought some stuff which was supposedly going to be a CBD oil vaping system, and it was apparently manufactured in the black market, and he had some just terrible, terrible, almost life-threatening reactions to it. And as the police and the federal agents and the state attorney general and everybody else was trying to trace where this product came from, they couldn't find how it got into the store. They couldn't find where it came from, who sold it, how it was transported, nothing about it. So they have no way of, at the moment, have no way of tracking how this was compounded, where it was compounded, and what all the other ingredients that were used. And it's very frustrating for them and dangerous for children.
Well, licensed retailers won't have any sort of products that haven't also come through the regulated system on their shelves, which is a big problem in states like California, where there are a number of unlicensed stores. Honestly, that can be partially blamed on over-strict regulations and licensing that make it very difficult for people to enter into the legal market. But it's also an issue of pricing. And I mean, not to sound self-serving, but things like overtaxation and unnecessarily high licensing fees and things like that make it very difficult for legal producers to be able to price their products in a way that's competitive with the illicit market. And so consumers who care more about money than about regulation are going to be driven to that market, and it can potentially impact their health.
Yeah, I have a friend who's a major dispensary operator and owner in California, and he said that it's very difficult for them, with all the restrictions which you pointed out, to compete because the illegal doesn't have all the things that he has to do, and they're selling it on the street at half of what he can sell stuff for in his dispensary. But he, as much as he tries to tell people you're taking your life in your hands, as you said, they look at what it costs them to buy the product and are not cognizant until they get terribly sick and maybe disabled for life on trying to save a few dollars or a few pennies.
And this is why we're urging consumers and trying to educate people as much as possible, because a lot of the media coverage kind of glosses over the fact that this is a problem that is almost entirely located in the illicit market. And then consumers might not necessarily know what to expect and know how to take proper precautions regarding their own personal health. And this isn't just a problem in legal states or just in California. I mean, aside from illicit storefronts, which don't really exist too much outside of California as far as I can tell, these products are available in every state through illicit dealers and underground networks. They're very popular with consumers. And if states don't act to regulate cannabis, they're going to see these products continue to proliferate in the underground market.
So you issued a report, your industry issued a report, and I do want to make a point that there are some radio networks who are afraid, and television networks who are afraid to talk about this issue, because they get their licenses from the SEC, and they tell you they're very reluctant to talk about it because they don't want to put their license in jeopardy. I have a friend who I'm on his show on a regular basis, major network, told him, in no uncertain terms, in February this year, in writing, you cannot use the word cannabis on the air. So you have somewhat of a challenge of getting your story out, because there may be restrictions within the news media that they don't really want to report it in a way that you think may be most appropriate. So with that said, how do our listeners learn more about this problem and learn how to protect themselves?
Well, I find it very difficult to wrap my head around the idea that the SEC would actually be punishing people for providing public health information. I mean, I can totally understand them having a problem with advertising, because technically it's still illegal under federal law. Right. But if they are in fact punishing stations for merely providing public health information, I think that that's probably an like something that that people would win in the courts over, because that's just socially irresponsible.
Okay. We've been talking to Morgan Fox of the National Cannabis Industry Association, and you've got a white paper out on this issue. How can my listeners get a hold of that?
Well, just go to our website, thecannabisindustry.org, and it should be right on the front page. But that paper is not simply about vaping and health. This is something that is focused on providing a framework for federal regulation so that lawmakers have a chance to see what a regulated cannabis system could look like before we actually get to descheduling and legalization at the federal level. And it's something that really I think a lot of lawmakers wanted to know about. You know, we were talking with members of Congress all the time, and they say, well, after we legalize, what's next? And we really hadn't seen anybody tackling that issue. So we decided to convene a panel of experts and stakeholders to try to come up with a framework for federal regulation that separates cannabis products based on their usage method and intended use, and then assigned existing federal agencies that already deal with similar products that would then be the lead federal regulator for those. So we're hoping to work with Congress very closely in the near future to develop legislation, as well as include this in existing legislation, so that when cannabis is descheduled, we can hit the ground running.
Okay. And one last time, Morgan, where can they find that document?
You can just find that on our main website. That's thecannabisindustry.org.
Super. We've been talking to Morgan Fox, who is the communications director for the National Cannabis Industry Association, a regular contributor to the conversation. Thank you, Morgan, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's listen as Dan introduces us to his next guest.
We have an unusual guest, something that we don't think about when we talk about cannabis, but a very important part of the growing process of cannabis. And we have Sonia Antonio, who is a founder of Sunshine Design. They are a power company. Now, not in the sense of power meaning generating power, but helping. And one of the things that was fascinating when I first talked to Sonny, he said, people go into the cannabis business and wind up with a $20,000 electric bill. So first of all, welcome to the program, and thank you for your experience and your time. Tell us about some of the things that people who are thinking about building a cannabis factory.
Thank you for allowing me to be on your program and speak about it. Yeah, many, many times, and I've been doing this actually tomorrow, we've been my 48th year in the industry of power. I spent 25 years with a power company, been private 23. Many times when these guys go out, they look at, I found a building, or I found a piece of property to go build the building. Many of them, the issues, and we have it in Oakland, we have it in San Francisco, we've had a lot of the areas in the Bay Area, they find a building and they buy the building and say, perfect, I got a place now. Now I can just start, bring my facilities in, and tomorrow I can start growing. And I have lights, and I have air conditioning, I have all this stuff, but don't realize that the power source to their building is only maybe a 200-amp panel. And I'll give you an example. If you need a water hose that has to be 100 pounds, but you only have a line that's going to bring you 40 pounds, you've got a problem. Power is the same way. You have to have the power system to meet the need. In many cases, they don't. And they don't do a preliminary investigation. They don't talk with people. They don't check with companies like us that we deal with the power company every day to say, wow, before I buy this building, do I have enough power to do what I want to do? So what we do is, one, do an investigation to find out what's available for them. Two, we spend time to say, okay, you have to do this. That's going to cost you this. This is going to be how much time it's going to take for us to design it and get you the new power source in. So those are the items we like to help these builders with. We do it with everybody, but in the case of the cannabis guys, all they're thinking about is growing. They don't think about electricity. They don't even think about gas. Sometimes they need more gas than what they're going to have for their HVACs, for their cooling systems. They don't even think about that. I got a building, let's go grow, and I got everything I need. And then all of a sudden they're 8 months, 9 months down the road, and they haven't got what they need, and it's too late. So pre-planning, doing preliminary investigations is what we try to help them. And it helps them keep their costs down, because not only that, now they're going to get on a rate schedule, on the correct rate schedule that says, wow, I'm on a rate schedule for X, but it should have been on X. So instead of paying maybe 13 or 14 cents a kilowatt hour, they're paying 40 because they got on the wrong one. That's how their bill gets crazy. So it's having people that can help them with that stuff.
I want to ask you something about what you just said, and that is, I found a building, and it physically might be the right size for whatever they want to do, but just because they find the building, is there a possibility that the electrical power service that could be available to the building would not be sufficient to supply what the building needs?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It happens a lot, and especially in older areas that their old warehouses, all they were used for was somebody had an art studio in there, so they don't need much power. So what the power company did is they said, okay, we have a power line here. We put a transformer up on this pole that only needs, say, 25 kVA transformer because they're feeding a 200-amp panel. So The customer like, fine, that's great. All of a sudden now, this guy goes to a 1,000-amp panel. Well, no longer can that transformer on the pole be the one he has to use. Now he's got to do an underground service, a primary 12,000-volt line to a site where a transformer on site lowers that to whatever they need. So now, not spending $1,000 to put the new power in, he's going to spend $40,000 to now do an underground, put a pad on, run power to his building. So, yes, and all of a sudden, this guy who thinks I'm going to have a new business, I'm only going to spend about a few thousand dollars to get started, now has a $100,000 bill just to get power to get started. And that's where pre-planning and feasibility studies help these guys to say, oops, not the building for me. I don't need what I need. Let's go find something else.
So do you just primarily work in California, or do you work in other parts of the country?
I work primarily design work in California. to give you an example, we did the big spaceship for Apple, their new headquarters. We did all that. We consult for them in other states about power because my background is rules and tariffs and power, and it's pretty much the same across the nation. We have counterparts in other states that allow, not all states allow, the power to be designed by somebody else instead of the main power company. I am now doing a lot of consulting for cannabis guys in Kentucky and Tennessee, helping them do the same thing that I'm doing in California, consulting with them, helping them doing power purchase agreements, means buying the gas cheaper. In some states like Kentucky, you haven't got to buy the gas from the power company. You can buy it from brokers and save yourself. You know, to give an example, I have one client. We're going to save them probably in the neighborhood of somewhere between $80,000 to $100,000 a year just purchasing the natural gas. So that cuts their costs, you know, increases their revenue, and does a lot of those things. So everybody has an expert in some field. This field happens to be the one that everybody always forgets about, electric and gas.
We're talking with Sonny Antonio about his Sunshine Design. And I want to talk about, we've been talking about how people in the cannabis industry don't pay attention to the power requirements, and it comes back to bite them with pretty substantial. You said earlier in the show they should be looking at a building, in this case, for its power, not only the power that it has there, but whether or not the public utility can supply the volume of electricity that they need to their building. We're in a situation where sales in the industry are growing about 35% a year, compounded, which is you double your business every two and a half years. And I'm wondering, as we, in California, we have a limited number of dispensaries that have been licensed, I think 435 or 453, something like that. But these facilities, based on what I'm hearing you say, eat up gobs of power.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if I could go a little deeper with you. Do the power companies have the ability, if there's another major expansion in dispensaries being built that have the kind of power requirements you're talking about?
If the existing facility is not large enough to meet the demand of the new load, it's the power company's responsibility to upgrade the existing facility to meet that load, not your line brand new, but the existing facility. So what they're doing with this huge influx, if they spent the last 2 years going back and restudying their grid and saying, wow, we need to build more substations, we need to generate more power. They bought a lot of new transmission lines across the valley, not just for cannabis, but for manufacturing, for Silicon Valley, for Amazon buildings, who's building million square foot buildings. They're upgrading their systems to meet that need. But that system or that process is slow. I mean, that's very, we're pushing on it, but it's slow. They have the capacity to build it, to get there. It's just getting that system there. And it'll take another year to get that upgraded to that point. Yep.
So if you think about what's happening, not only do we have the situation going on in the new dispensaries and grow houses and all these things being built at a time when the economy on a nationwide basis is expanding, at the same time we're closing power plants. And my question is, do you envision the possibility that you would be designing a grow house in the future that could be powered, its air conditioning and light power sources from solar energy?
Yep. I think there's a lot of options. There's solar energy, there's fuel cells, there's a couple of other systems that are out there what you're seeing now is a new style of generation. It's not just fossil fuel. You're seeing a lot of wind power being used in California. Wind power, solar power, you still have water, and that, you know, still generating a lot of power from the PG&E systems that have water plants. But the new style substations, more efficient, better wiring, the loss capacity from transportation is decreased. So you're seeing a lot of different options. Solar power is great. Fuel cells are coming through, and batteries are you seeing. And so I would say you're going to see more with a better efficiency. And fuel cells are great. Solar is great, but there's better solar systems being built. You'll see a lot of solar fields behind cannabis projects now. So that'll be a plus also. But it's not going to be – solar is not a 100% way to go for cannabis, because if you have any issues, you can't lose that power source. And you lose a crop, you're dead. So backup generators are being used. Solar alternative energy is being used and tying into the main system. All three give it more efficiency and decrease our costs.
The economic opportunity is there. And looking at the possibility of an increasing market, I mean, we know that the sales are growing this year about 35%, so that at a 35% growth rate, you're going to double the size of your business of every 2.5 years. And there's some people thinking that we're going to go from $6 billion in sales to $25 or $30 billion in sales by 2024. Doesn't that require even more demands? I mean, if a guy's got a facility and he wants to grow his business, he's got to grow his power. So what does he do?
Well, it's called forward planning. Honestly, it's called forward looking at your systems, doing your homework. Just, you know, when I built my business, I had to do my homework. I had to make sure I know I'm going to be designing underground electrical, phone, cable, but how many customers are going to want to come to me beside or go to the power company? You have to build what you want. You got to look at, okay, what do I want the first 3 years? Where am I going to be the next 4 or 5 years? 8 years, as you just said, you know, in 5 or 6 years, we're going to be double, triple, quadrupling the business as well as the buildings needing power. So the power companies need to be more cognizant of what's going on. I mean, I hate to say it, but a lot of people have blinders on when it comes to cannabis. They don't realize. They just think it's outgrowing. They just think it's, I mean, I had to educate myself. They just think, oh, everybody's out smoking this stuff. They don't realize it's medical stuff, huge, huge medical. And the pluses that helps for that kind of world, that increases the need, increases planning, increases looking at, okay, we got to look at what kind of power sources. So it's planning. The ability to build plants to bring the power to these customers is there. Because you have to also look at a lot of things that are also, remember, those buildings that are there that are getting power, some of them are being wiped out. So that takes that power off the grid, and you're adding new power on. You're not always adding new power on. There is some power coming off the grid because you're removing buildings. You're removing, in some cases, we have 6 buildings getting power. They buy all 6 buildings, bulldoze it down, and they only bring in 1 service instead of 6 services. So there's a balance at the same time. Do I see a problem with power sources in the future? No. I see better planning, so you can plan better to know that when you get to step 2, 3, 4, or 5, the need of power or the power source will be there. But it's you, the responsibility of that business owner, to plan just like you plan for anything else.
We're speaking with Sonny Antonio, and his company is Sunshine Design. So I'm not in Kentucky or Tennessee or California, and there's 33 states that have legalized medical marijuana. If I'm interested in wanting to get into this business, who do I go to locally if I can't get you?
The first thing I'd always do, and I tell everybody, even in California, go to the power company that's the main power source there. And it's funny how you ask that question, because that's what happened in Kentucky and Tennessee. Somebody who knew me in California had, you know, this world's called about networking. I've said it my whole life. It's network, 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 network. You got to be in front of people. The internet's not going to network for you. Text is not going to network. You got to get your ugly face in front of people so they can see who you are when you want to network for business. That's how you build your businesses. Somebody in Kentucky and Tennessee had heard about what I was doing in California, helping the cannabis guys, in a conversation through NCIA, National Cannabis Industry Association. These guys had met me in a meeting in Hawaii. They met me in a meeting in San Francisco. Met me in a meeting up in Oregon. They made a comment to the guy, say, hey, before, talk to the power company, but before you go any further, see if there's an alternative company that can help you consult with your power issues. So talk to a local power company, and honestly, you can always call me because I can connect you with people across the United States. I also sit on the National Association of Home Builders Board of Directors, and I have for about almost 20 years. We connect, so we can connect you to other people in other states. We have connections.
I want to go back, if I could, for just a moment to the solar issue. Solar should not be used as a primary source, but could be used as a supplemental or backup sources.
That's what I'm saying, and that's not just my expertise of that. It's the expertise of people who are out there saying, you know, solar may not, you are not going to get everything you need from that solar onto, especially on a power system that you have a large usage of power for your grow house. If you're looking at, you know, anywhere from, I would say, from a 1,000-amp panel larger, you got a lot of usage, and you need that consistent power. You need the lights consistently working. You need the HVAC to cool, make sure those plants don't get burnt. You have other items in there. You need consistent power. Right, wrong, or indifferent, your local power company gives you that consistent meter power. That power is on. If you have an issue with your solar field, or you know, you got solar, you got battery backup, whatever else, you need to make sure that the systems are getting better, by the way. The solar systems are getting solar panels and backup batteries, and that is getting better. I'm not saying don't use it. I'm just saying at this time, right now, what's out there in technology, many will tell you, don't make that your only source of power. It'll get better, but right now, your best source of power is a direct connection to that power company wherever you are. That system is the best system. If it goes down, they're the ones going to fix it right away. If your solar system goes down or you got a problem with the solar system, you got to get somebody out there to fix that system. Any delay in time of growing or production or oil extraction or whatever else costs you money. Downtime costs you money.
There's also the power company process. Do you have a city or county government issue that you have to go through too?
No, when it comes to power, it's, for instance, that's a great, you know, your comment then is what happened in California in 84, and I can give you a brief history of it. When I was working for the power company in 1984, I was what they call a senior rep, the person who works between the customer and PG&E. And that 83-84, PG&E took so long to build their electrical lines and gas lines to get them to the customers that the major builders in California went to the commission and said, we can't wait. They take too long. We can't wait a year to get power to our subdivisions. It's ridiculous. So they created what they call applicant install, allows the builder in California to put the electrical lines and the gas lines, the transformers, everything needed except for all the power company does is plug into the system. Expedites their process by almost 6 to 8 months so they have power faster. Mm. Then applicant design is what we do. I was one of the guys that authored applicant design in 94-95 that said, let's set outside companies engineer our work so that now you have an alternative. We can design something in 6 to 8 months that right now the power company takes 12 to 16 to 18 months to design the same thing, expediting getting power back on grid. So always work with the power company. The cities, especially in California, the cities have their jurisdiction for conditions of improvement or conditions to build that, but the regulations are the power company and that public utilities commission in that state. Those are the regulators, not the cities. They have no jurisdiction. The actual power source is the power company and a consultant or a designer like us.
If there was a checklist that a person who's contemplating getting in the business and is looking at a building, what do you think are the two or three things or four things that absolutely have to be done before you make a decision to make an offer on a building?
Check with the power company and make sure that you know what size power source, what size meter panel. And I'll give you an example. Is it a 200 amp sitting there? Is there 400 amp sitting there? What power source type? Voltage type, single phase, three phase, panel size, what is it? Get your electrical system, notify the local power company, get your electrician you're going to work with to do your work inside because he's going to do some work inside anyway. Get those two together and figure out what is there, what's available, and what is it going to cost if it's not available, what's it going to cost to upgrade to meet the need of my new building? Critical.
And you do that before you make an offer on the building.
Absolutely. I would not purchase a building without what do I have there? What's my electrical source? What's my, you know, gas sometimes, but while you're there, get them both. What's my electrical source available? What is there now? Then you need to find out what is the cost to upgrade that to meet my need for my new building.
This is could be a costly mistake. If you're underpowered, yep. As you said, you could lose a crop, which is yep. Revenue that you're going to lose. But if you yep. Have to go in and put all the stuff in, you could lose your profits. So you're not being realistic about what it is you need to do to get ready to be in this business.
No, you're correct, because the worst thing that I've seen guys early on do is buy a building, and then they go, and all of a sudden they think they're ready to go, and they get in there. Electrician goes through and says, oh, no, you need this, you need that. Oh, you only have a single phase, you don't have three phase. Oh, you only have 122-08, you need 277-480. Next thing you know, his plan with all of his investors is to open up on September 1st, but guess what? He can't get a job done, get all the stuff done until October, November, December. Guess what you've lost? You've lost crop from September to, say, December. Not only do you have extra mm-hmm. Cost, $30,000, $60,000, $80,000, to do this work, but the revenue of what you were going to grow from September to, say, December, now it's a double-edged sword. You've lost money on both sides, and now you're behind.
Well, we've been speaking to Sonny Antonio from Sunshine Design, and he's been talking to us about the importance of understanding your power requirements and make sure you've got them. Sonny, how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, two ways. Office, 707-429-5858, or you can just email me or go to our website, but you can email me is the best way to get questions answered. S.Antonio, A-N-T-O-N-I-O, at sunshinedesignllc.net. Send me anything you want. I'd be happy to help you or direct you into people that could help you in your area.
Thank you so much for your time and your excellent contribution to help educate our audience. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
America's Cannabis Conversation.
This is Dan Perkins, your host and co-creator of America's Cannabis Conversation. I want to take a moment to tell you why we started this groundbreaking network and show. Hundreds of thousands of people who work in the cannabis industry trying to help people are not permitted to tell their story on the public airways of radio and TV. In spite of these restrictions, the American cannabis industry is growing at about 35% per year and accelerating. You will hear real people telling their story of how cannabis helped them. When I started talking to people in the exploding cannabis business and telling them what we were trying to do, I heard this common question. When can you help me? Well, starting today, we are going to give you a voice. We promise to do our best to bring you a high-value, entertaining program. We want from you what you want from your customers. Come back for more. And now, let's meet our guest.
Well, now we're going to talk about money with our gentleman, Anthony Planis, who's going to help us understand what's going on in the cannabis markets, any news about new offerings or mergers or acquisitions, and what's going on in Washington to see if we can figure out where the opportunities might be to invest. Welcome, Anthony, and what's on your mind today?
So HEXO, which is a Canadian producer, actually released earnings this week. So I like to follow the Canadian market because it's kind of a more mature version of where the U.S. might go. And HEXO had lower sales prices per gram for dried flower, and that's a trend we've seen in the U.S. as well, with Oregon and Colorado both seeing the price per gram sinking as big amounts of supply come online.
So can I just ask you a quick question about that? When you say that a lowering of price per gram, are you talking about what the growers get for it or the retail price that the customer pays?
Well, it should be both. So if the grower is getting less, you also assume that they're probably getting less for it at the market.
Okay. All right. So did they say in their earnings report what was going on?
Yeah, so with HEXO's situation, they are really leaning towards value-added products. So these are infused products where THC or CBD is sold in either a powder or a liquid form. And so Canada hasn't fully opened up to edibles, excuse me, vapes, and infused drinks, which will be coming online in the rest of the year. And so HEXO is selling bud, which isn't really their specialty, and but everybody's selling bud right now because infused products aren't available yet.
So just take a moment and tell our listeners what is the significance of the infused markets away from candy and brownies and cookies.
Yeah,
what is
the infused market is really where cannabis is going. So when we think about cannabis nowadays, about how it's used, traditionally it's smoked, right? The dried bud, the dried flower, is what people roll into joints or smoke it. And smoking is becoming less and less popular, especially in the U.S. And so that's really a market that we're not going to see a lot of growth in. And so companies, the easiest thing for them to do is to grow bud and then sell it. So you've got a lot of supply, and then you're not going to have a huge increase in demand. But value-added products, these infused drinks, really, is where it's going to go. But also vapes as well. That's a market that's growing. So vaping is becoming really, really popular. And drinks as well. So that's something that hasn't really, the market on that hasn't opened up in Canada and within the U.S. It's very, very early stage. And so we're going to see a lot of growth in that. We're going to see a lot of people that don't consume cannabis right now that will start to consume it when it's easy to consume in something like a beverage.
So when we hear about Miller and Budweiser buying growers, they're setting up. Even Coca-Cola is buying growers, along with Altria and Philip Morris and Altria and R.J. Reynolds. They're buying. So there's I don't understand the process of how it turns into an infused, but is it basically just ground up powder, or is it an oil that's infused with alcohol or wine or whatever?
Yeah, there's different ways they can go about it. So one of the processes, decarbing creates a powder that can be used, and then extracting the oil, that's another way that they can go about it. This is part of the market that isn't fully developed yet, and so part of what they need to do is they need to be able to extract out the THC or the CBD, and they need to remove the terpenes, which is basically the flavoring. And so if you want to appeal to a demographic that currently doesn't consume cannabis, it helps if you can make it not taste like cannabis water, you know? And so that's really where we're going. Mondelez, they've talked about doing CBD snacks. Molson Coors, they've got a partnership with HEXO, and they claim that their drink isn't going to taste like, you know, marijuana water or whatever. And Coca-Cola is also looking into it. So, yeah, the appeal there is that they can get a product that creates a buzz or CBD, a wellness aspect, but it's not going to taste or smell like a bud taste.
Andrew, or Anthony, excuse me, is there a play or a pure play for our people who are thinking about investing in cannabis in general? Is there, in your mind, a good play, even though this is very early, could be a very successful long-term investment?
Well, so kind of the like blue chip name, so to speak, for this would be the bigger brands that are going into it. So, you know, something along the lines of Molson Coors or Altria or Constellation Brands that have said that they're going to invest in it. These are massive companies that are many billions of dollars in market cap, so they're pretty big and stable, but this is a big runway for them to grow into. And then on the smaller side, the more speculative side, extraction companies are an option. And so there's both Canadian and American extraction plays that are going to be leading the way into creating the products that we're talking about.
Well, interesting. Thank you for that. We've been speaking with Andrew Planis, who was with Banyan Hill Company Publishers. Tell us a little bit about the products that you offer in the cannabis area.
Yeah, so we run a couple services, but these are monthly newsletters, and so you can get our top picks for the marijuana sector, and we break down the analysis, and it's in plain English, so it's not confusing. We give context, and then we also follow the companies that we recommend, and in addition to that, we have a free service on YouTube. It's the weekly podcast where I just cover the big market news that I think is really important for the industry.
So how do we get in touch with you? How do we find you?
Yeah, so you can go to banyanhill.com. On YouTube, I'm Anthony Planeth, and you'll see me as the pop stock guru. And then B420 will have a webpage with links to all of that.
Super. All right. Thank you, Anthony. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Now let's continue the conversation with Dan and his guest.
Well, welcome to the conversation. Today we have a very special guest in a very important, fast-growing business, and that is the CBD oil and products business. His name is Richie James, and he is the CEO of Hemp Life, and that's L-Y-F-E. Interesting spelling of life. Richie, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Good. Let's talk a little bit about you and how you got into the CBD business and what's been happening to you.
Absolutely. So it's kind of a twofold story of how we are where we're at today with Hemp Life. First and foremost, my background and what I've spent most of my adult life in has been in the fitness and wellness space. I was a strength and conditioning coach at Division I University. I owned fitness centers, sports performance centers, and training and things like that. So most of my adult life has been spent trying to help individuals feel better, perform better, look better, and be better. And all through exercise, nutrition, supplementation, and all those aspects that are involved with someone living what I like to call an optimal life. That, first and foremost, is what my background is. Secondly, my family. It's important to understand this as well, too, is my family is also cut from some of the same cloth that I'm cut from. My wife is a former world-class middle distance runner. She has accomplished so many accolades as that as an 800 and 1600-meter runner here in Texas, held the record in the mile for 23 years. Ran for the U.S. national team, on and on and on and on. I can sit here and give all kinds of stuff. My older daughter, 26, is a retired former professional soccer player, played for the U.S. national team, high-level Division I college athlete, and so that. Then I have a 19-year-old as well that is a former collegiate volleyball player. So there you have that fold in. And then bring us up to speed to kind of how what really triggered us to get into the entire CBD space, and that is my mother-in-law, my wife's mom, got cancer, and she was terminal, and she only had so long to live. And so obviously, like any loved one would do, my wife went to work doing some research, trying to find some therapies, whatever it may be, to help her mom just live out the rest of her days in a more quality type of way, just helping her, wanting to help her feel better like we would want any loved one to feel going through what she was going through. One of those things she came across was CBD. And she researched it, found out a lot about it, and started implementing it into her daily life. And then obviously, because of my background, I started implementing it into my daily life, and so did my family as well. Got tremendous results from that. Fast forward to last October, actually September, we were sitting around here in our living room at our house and said, why do we not start a CBD company? It has such profound effects on our lives. It has such a personal story with us and how it's affected us through Susan, my mother-in-law, and how that worked out. And we want to help other people. Our mission in life is we want to help as many people as possibly can experience what we personally experience. And that's how Hemp Life was birthed. We wanted it to be a lifestyle. We wanted it to be, you know, something that was going to affect and help change people's lives. Live optimally, because our slogan is, Dan, is live a vibrant life. No one was born to live a boring, painful, suffering type of life. And so if you look up the word, the definition of the word vibrancy, it is an amazing the way it's described. And that's what we want Hemp Life, our movement, our tribe is what we call it, our community, to be about. And so as you go to our site, you look at our company, we want to also set ourselves apart. We just didn't want to be some other just regular old CBD company that throws up a bunch of medical jargon that wants to, you know, impress you with all these high-level type growing, this and that, which all those are very important processes, which that's great important. But what I've learned through 30 years of working with individuals and working in the fitness and wellness space, I could talk to you at high level all day long, but really, truthfully, at the end of the day, you're looking at me with, as we're here on the radio with the WIIFM, what's in it for me type eyes and thoughts. All you're really concerned with is, how is it going to help me? Not, I'm kind of like the race car driver. I just want to drive the car. I don't care how you fix it. Just fix it. And so we wanted to be transparent. That's why when you go to our site, you see things about our family, who we are, what we are, you know, and who you're buying from, because relationships are everything. And that's Hemp Life. So it's live a vibrant life, and that's how we got to where we are today with our products.
We're speaking with Richie James, CEO of Hemp Life, and we're talking about CBD products. The growth of this industry has been phenomenal, but as in many emerging markets and emerging products, you have some people that are less than honest and candid with their potential customers. Do you see much of abuse in this business?
Yes, to be quite blunt. Again, coming from the fitness world, I've dealt with supplements. We've built our career on, I've owned supplement businesses and stuff like that. So this is no different. As anybody is aware, I'm sure you are aware as well, Dan, you know, that world went rampant as well too. And so, and as we've grown there, obviously, regulations and things have stepped in place, and now, you know, the bad just weeds itself out, and you will weed yourself out. And so the same thing's going to happen here. As this is a brand new frontier, everybody's trying to get in on it. Everybody's willing to cut corners to make that happen. You know, again, us wanting to be transparent, and I speak for myself, I can't speak for anybody else, but being transparent, you know, we just want to make sure our number one goal is to help you. And so, yes, there are a lot of companies out there that aren't doing the right thing, and they will be caught, and they will be shut down, and the bad will weed itself out eventually. And unfortunately, it's just how the world is right now, and that's how it's got to go. I would just say be very careful in what you do.
Are there a couple of tips that you can give somebody who might be exploring the possibility of using CBD, what to look for and to be cautious about?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have one of the top attorneys in the U.S. on cannabis and CBD, the entire space here in Dallas is where I'm calling you from, is where I'm from, and where our company is based out of. You know, some things that she said that I've heard her speak about, and so, you know, I'm going to pass along some things that she's taught us, is when you're looking at companies, and there are some, and some of these things are so basic that you wouldn't even think about this when you're looking at a company, when you're trying to figure out whether it's a legit company or not. And this is amazing to me. She says, one of the first things I look for when I go to a website is this. If that website has says anything about we are legal in all 50 states, she says, run. That's not true. That company is not a good company. Get away from it. And that's very, you know, that sounds very simple because it actually is, because that's not true. CBD is not legal in all 50 states. Federally, and again, we have to understand how our government works, there's a difference between the federal level and the state levels. So there are about a handful of states right now that don't allow us to ship our product into their states. Idaho, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, just as a few weeks ago, and anybody that's involved in this space knows it's ever-changing. It can change tomorrow. We'll get a letter from our attorney. We're going, okay, now you can ship the state or you can't ship that state. It's just, it's changing, but it's getting settled down, and it's slowing down, and it's becoming more established. Ohio is another state right now as well. We can ship there, but it has to go to pharmacies, so we can't ship just individuals. So, number one, they say they're legal in all 50 states. That's a very true sign. Number two, making curative claims on their website. If they're claiming they cure things, making medical claims, any of those types of things, run. It's not a good company to deal with. Those are just two of the most, I would say, visible things that you can really look for on the site. You know, lab reports is just another basic thing. Now, lab reports could be good and could be bad because lab reports can be doctored. So I wouldn't say that. So some things that people are actually putting there are, you know, these things I mentioned to you first. So those are things I would say look for first and foremost to whether or not you're dealing with somewhat legitimately.
Okay, we've got about a minute and a half or so left in this particular section. I would like to go one step further. What is amazing to me is how it's possible that the oil, the hemp oil, CBD, can treat so many different problems that we might have in our body with the same liquid. If I got that wrong, or are there different liquid, different strains of hemp that produce different results?
No, you are correct in what you're saying. It's amazing how it covers such a broad area of things that you can personally address with your wellness. Absolutely. Now, you can. What we do here at Hemp Life, we take it a step further. Not only do we take that CBD and the broad application that it has, but we also have the ability to infuse our products with a few additional type of ingredients and herbal compounds that address specific needs, such as ginger in one of our products. Ginger is a great, great anti-inflammatory type herbal compound. So we put ginger in our products. So ginger helps a lot there. Then we have melatonin in one of our product called Dream for helping people with restful nights and things like that. So we're able to do things like that to enhance it and specifically make it for certain things as well. Our Bliss line, we have valerian, which is a calming herb, a relaxing type herb, just kind of bringing the balance in our Bliss line. So we have those, chamomile, so the list goes on. So we can do things to help enhance it.
Well, we've been speaking with Richie James, the CEO of Hemp Life, about the industry, the good guys and the bad guys, and he's a good guy, and what his company's doing. And Richie, how do people get a hold of you? How do they find out what you have to offer?
Go to Hemp Life, that's spelled HEMPLYFE.net. That's HempLife.net. Everything is on there. We have a blog that is phenomenal that goes through entire descriptions of things and explains things about the differences and stuff and all kinds of stuff. So we're trying to educate you along the way as well, too. And in addition, just let your listeners know as well, we have a special called Radio 20, Radio 20. If you put that in your promotional coupon code at checkout, you're going to get a 20% discount and free shipping. So hemplife.net with a coupon code radio20, you're going to get 20% discount and free shipping.
Well, thank you. We've been talking with Richie James, the CEO of Hemp Life, and we'll have him back on the show again soon. This is America's Cannabis Conversation.
America's Cannabis Conversation.
Thank you for joining the conversation today, and we hope that you will join us in the coming weeks. Here are just a few of the guests joining the conversation. A Harvard researcher studying the impact of cannabis on pancreatic cancer, and he's getting ready to start an FDA study. An entrepreneur who his whole family started a CBD products manufacturing and distribution company. A power engineer who helps potential growers figure out how much power they will need to run their grow houses. You will be surprised at how much power is really needed. A man who designed and built trimming machines for cannabis, and he eliminates hand trimmers and pays for itself in months, not years. An investment analyst will help you make sense out of investing in cannabis stocks. A British pharmacist who has a 12-point checklist that for you to go over before you buy CBD products. So go to our website, www.americascannabisconversation.com, and you can see who's coming on next week and in future weeks. Keep coming back, finding more information. These and many more interesting conversations are coming up on America's Cannabis Conversation for you. This is Dan Perkins. Come join us next week.